Sorry. What was the first argument that we had in regard to change?
Argument?
We don't like to do change, yes, but a specific thing that we looked at. Let me fill this out a sheet for her.
Don't have time.
That's our first argument that we looked at. I don't have time. Okay. Now, we're going to look at a second argument that we often get from those in the church when we bring up and we say, we're going to start a visitation program. And I'm not talking, the big thing when we talk about visitation, I think we've kind of seen already when we made a list of the folks that we can visit. When we think of visitation, we often think of the cold call. But visitation is so, so much more than that with all the different folks that you can approach. The second,
cold calling is the scary part.
The cold calling is the scary part. And that's one of the last things we're kind of start to address in the latter portion of what we're going to do today. And then I want to give some material, and David will print out some of us. We don't have enough for everybody, but we'll print out some material that will kind of walk you through some of those things. But we're going to address those a bit later on. The second thing that a lot of folks like to say, I don't have enough time. Two, I don't know enough. Okay. Everybody is afraid when it comes to visitation. And of course, if you're going to go visit someone who just needs a friend or they're feeling lonely within the congregation, how much Bible are you going to have to go and know? Now, you don't have to know the Bible in that case. But in the situation, and even in the situations, let's say you meet somebody that is very earnest about knowing the Bible, but they have been very solidly grounded. I say solid, that's kind of interesting. How do you make solid ground on shaky ground? But they've been ingrained in a denominational belief. What can you tell them? How can you deal with them at that moment if they express an interest in wanting to know about the church and study?
Set up a time.
Set up a time for what?
Bible study.
With who?
Somebody that can.
Somebody that can. You know, there are always other folks that can help you out. You're not alone. So if somebody says, you know, boy, I want to get into, quote, Revelation or whatever it is, and go have see our young folks who evidently gone through this and they're all set now, right? But you can always rely on a brother or sister. But still, I think we know a lot more than what we really think we do. And I'm going to give you a brief, again, I don't want to call it a sermon because hopefully we'll have interaction here. But I want to start with the Old Testament. And I want to go and find out what we know. So, how do we start out the Old Testament? With who?
Adam.
We've got A for Adam. What do we know about Adam?
God created him.
God created Adam. Okay, what else?
Eve. He
was the first man. Who's Eve?
Eve's wife.
Eve's his wife. Where'd she come from?
His rib.
Come from his rib. Okay, what do we know about their story? What can you tell me? Okay, I heard about this man, Adam. God created Adam and Eve. What about them?
Put them in the garden.
David?
They were the ones who were first tempted by the serpent and brought knowledge of good and evil into the world.
Brought the knowledge of good and evil in the world. They had their first sin. Well, how did that impact things? How'd that work out? They get cast out of the garden, and I'm sorry.
It
multiplied rather quickly. So we've got Adam, and of course, Adam and Eve. Who are their children that we have recorded?
Cain, Abel, and Seth.
Yes, ma'am. Aha! They took it away from you. How many daughters did they have? Did they have daughters?
Yeah, they
Genesis chapter 5, verse 4. We know that they had daughters. Who was their third son? The third one we have recorded is Seth. But what's the importance of Seth? The line. He's the one that Christ comes out of. What's the importance of Cain and Abel?
That was the first murder.
The first murder that we have recorded in the Bible. Very good. What do we know? First siblings that we know about in the Bible.
Offerings and correct obedience.
We can go there and talk about how faith, Abel's sacrifice, was found more acceptable. Faith means what? What's faith?
Obedient
beliefs. Where do we get faith?
Word of God.
Faith comes by hearing, hearing by the Word of God, Romans 10:17. So, absolutely grabs on to belief and obedient belief, yes. So we can go on and we can about Adam. What's Eve's last name?
Whatever Adam did.
Genesis chapter 5 verse 2. Genesis 5 verse 2. Oh, Sterling, go ahead. I didn't see your hand.
Wasn't it Adam?
Yes, it's Adam. Very good. Genesis chapter 5 verse 2. And he created the male and female, and he blessed them and named them man in the day when they were created. And of course, that word man is Adam. So it was Adam, Adam, and Eve, Adam, which is kind of funny when you look at that. So this is who we have. We could go on and we could talk a lot about Adam. Now, after Adam, who's the next person that we can tackle? The next big one that comes within Scripture?
Abraham.
Noah.
How before? Ah, no, can't go, because that's a big one. Who said no? Whoever said, very good. Very good. So we got Noah, right? Okay, what do we know about Noah? He built the ark. David.
He was the only person in his time who actually walked with God, except for his family.
He was a preacher of righteousness according to 2 Peter. Okay, very good. If we think about the ark, how many doors or windows in the ark? Very good. How long did it rain?
4 days,
40 nights. Very good. Genesis chapter 7, verse 4. How long was there water on the earth?
Year.
Year and 10 days. Year and 10 days that there was water on the earth. How often had Noah dealt with rain?
Never.
It never dealt with rain. Why did he build this ark? Why?
Going to destroy
it. Why was he going to destroy it? Sin. And all those. I got different ones coming. But that's, yeah, sin because of the wickedness. It had filled the earth. So we need to have Noah come about. Now, Adam tells us where we've come from, right? Noah tells us how bad sin is. Sin was so bad that God had to destroy the earth at that point with water, with the exception of how many?
Eight.
Very good. And this is what we get from Noah, as we know about God's judgment against what?
Sin.
Against sin. Okay. So we've got who?
Adam.
And we got?
Noah.
And now we've got who?
Abraham.
Okay. What's the importance of Abraham?
Covenant.
We've got a covenant. What covenant? Three main parts. There are three promises given to Abraham by God, and those three promises, based on Abraham's faith, are what?
The land of Canaan was given to his descendants.
So a land promise?
And multitudes.
A nation promise?
Be a great
nation. Mm-hmm.
And that Christ would come through his bloodline.
Which is a seed promise. So three promises that you can share with folks when you talk about, if they want to know parts about the Bible, that you know. Did you have set in your mind? You've got Adam there. You've got Noah. You've got Abraham in your mind. It's very important when you go through, excuse me, and you look at Abraham. Now, what other big aspect do we talk about in Abraham when we look at him? What other? And how so?
Because he was obedient.
And how so?
He left his home for,
Left his home, for he didn't know where. Okay.
Sacrifice his son.
Was willing to sacrifice his son. And boy, can't you get into a whole lot when we start talking about willing to sacrifice his son. So you could go that direction with Abraham. Now, we've got Adam, we've got Noah, we've got Abraham. Who's next? Now, we could go with Isaac, and I've got basically, when I look at this in the Old Testament, I want to hit on 12 specific points. The 13, it's unlucky, so we're going to leave Isaac out. Who's the next person?
Jacob.
Jacob. Okay. So, we've got Adam, Noah, Abraham, Jacob. What's important about Jacob?
He was father of the 12 tribes.
Father of the 12 tribes, okay. What else about him? What are the people who called following him that become the nation? Israelites. Why are they called Israel?
Because that became the name
of that. That's the name. That's the name that Jacob is given as Israel. The importance of that is the El, which is God's name. You notice God's people always take on his name. Same thing in this dispensation as it was back in that time frame. Abram becomes Abraham. Again, he picks up a syllable in reference of God. Sarai becomes Sarah, which again is, she picks up a syllable in noting God in her name. We have these different folks. You have to tie Israel and Jacob together because Israel are Jacob's kids, right? And he had how many kids? Had 12 kids, okay? And he gets those same three promises. The land promise, the nation promise, the seed promises come to Jacob, okay? So this ties him back to Abraham, and it continues this line. This is the story of the Bible. We tell our kids this. We tell one another this. We need to tell the world. This is important because we're talking about the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Telling the story of the Bible. Now, these 12 sons, there's one very specific son that we often talk about. Joseph. Okay? What's the important part about Joseph?
He was able to, God gave him the ability to decipher a person's dreams.
Gave him ability to decipher dreams, yeah? What else?
He was put in a position to save his family.
Put in a position to save his family? What ends up happening to his family? Where are they right when?
They end up.
They end up.
Famine, and they have to go to Egypt for food.
Right. And they go for food, and they find out when they go to Egypt for food that who's there? Joseph.
The guy that they sold
into slavery for how much?
30 pieces of silver.
Very good. So we see this slave. He goes there, and you can tell the story of Potiphar, and you can tell the story of the interpretations of the dreams, and you can tell how he becomes second of all Egypt, and how when his brothers come there, that they don't recognize him right off, and kind of the play, they go back and forth until he reveals himself to them. If you do this, if you walk through this, you know what you've done? You've went through the first 2,500 years of human history. You've gone from Adam through Joseph. That's pretty incredible. And that's a long way through. Now, when we get through this 25 years, if you're going to have to remember this and you're trying to think, okay, you know, because you've got this information, the big thing is to try to put it in an outline form. We're talking about this person. Who is that person? Just read it.
Anna.
We're talking about Anna. Anna's from Sweden. She's Anna Gigi, okay? This is Anna Gigi from Sweden. That's how we start remembering this outline of the Old Testament stuck in our minds. Anna Gigi takes 2,500 years of the Old Testament. Now we go into the New Testament. We go back to Egypt. Back to Egypt where we have these people, Israel. Moses is next. That's exactly right. So we start out with Moses. What's the important thing about Moses?
Led the Israelites out of captivity.
Why?
God told him to.
Okay. Why?
Because the Israelites were being
They were going to their promised land.
Because of a promise. They become God's people. How many people went in to the land of Egypt when they started out, these Israelites? before they were really Israelites?
72.
They're in Exodus chapter 1, verse 5. How many come out?
A whole bunch.
A whole bunch. In males, 603,550 plus the Levites. These are those 20 and over, not considering females or others. They're in Exodus chapter 38, verse 26. They go to Mount Sinai. They receive the
Ten Commandments.
They receive the law. They give them direction. This, you can go through this. This is basic stuff that we all know. So, Moses dies. What? Who comes along then?
Joshua.
Joshua. Okay. Joshua's importance is what?
He led them in Canaan.
Leads them into Canaan. What's the importance about that?
The land promises.
That's part of the promise. So now we've got a nation and we've got a land of the promises. We're just waiting on one thing now, and that's the seed. You can take people to that. You can talk about the battles that Joshua had to go through. You can talk about the Israelites and the fact that they didn't do as they were supposed to and wipe everybody out at as they were supposed to. You can talk about the problems that came from that. Following Joshua, what's the really next big thing? How? Pardon?
Christ.
Well, you could go that far, but not the next big thing.
Babylonian captivity. King David.
No, go further back. Judges. Whoever said judges? Judges. Okay. So now we're to Anajijah, Abraham, Noah, or excuse me, Adam, Noah, Abraham, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, Joshua, Judges. Okay? The judges, what kind of time frame is that with the judges? No, no. What happens with the judges? How can we remember that time frame? How do the people act in this time frame?
Not very good.
Not very good. They do what is right in their own eyes. Why are the judges come about? Why are they there?
To try to teach them what was right.
Try to teach the people's right and to deliver them, because they were under impact from the Philistines and so forth. And so they would get things straightened up, they'd be delivered, and then the judge would die, and what would happen?
Everything would
go back right. Who are some judges?
Deborah.
Samson,
Deborah.
Samuel.
Ehud. What's important about Ehud?
Left-handed.
He's left-handed. How come you know that?
Because I'm left-handed.
There you go. Who's the judge who made the foolish promise? Foolish promise. And loses somebody in his household.
He
says, whatever comes out of my house after the battle, when I get home, I'm sacrificing to God.
And he did it.
Oh, man.
Jephthah. Jephthah. Only woman judge again. Judah, strong man of the judges. Samson, who's the old judge that had really rotten sense?
Eli.
And of course, that last judge, Samuel. You can go through these. You've got them in our minds. It's just a matter of getting them down. Now we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We've got 8 of the 12 things that I want to look at in the Old Testament. What happens when the judges die? What come about?
Kings.
Got the kings. Okay. Who's the first king?
David.
Why did they choose him? Yeah, not David. Saul. Tall. Tall Saul. He comes about. They chose him because of his stature. How does that work out?
Doesn't work so good.
It doesn't work out so good. Not at all. So we go through that. Who's the next king?
David.
How's he chosen?
God
chooses a man after his own heart. Very good. How long does Saul rule?
They each rule 40 years.
Saul, David, and the next one, who is?
Solomon.
And Solomon, big importance is?
Wisdom,
absolutely. What else?
He built the temple.
The temple is huge. And you can talk about how the temple is. You can go back and even talk in Moses when you're back there, talking about how God inspired Aholiab and Bezalel to build that tabernacle. But then when it came along, and David says to God, I want to build your house. God said, no, we're going to build you a house, your descendants, one of your descendants. David says, that means we're going to have a physical one. And he draws up all the plans to the temple. And then Solomon goes through and builds the temple. God says, fine, I'll abide with it. You made it, so forth. But the temple's huge, because that affects worship from there on out. And honestly, it affects it today, too, because there are so many folks that believe that there's going to be a third temple, which We don't believe that. We don't believe there's going to be an earthly kingdom. We go through these kings. There are three kings. Then what happens? Division. Okay.
Happens pretty quick.
Yes. Happens within how long after they have kings? 120 years. 40. So, we've got who? And then? Joseph, Moses, Joshua, Judges, Kings, Division. This brings us up through 10. Now, how does it split? If you're going to tell us the Old Testament, how do the kingdoms split? What happens?
10 tribes
and 2. Okay, very good. Jeroboam and Rehoboam. Who was the king or became the king of the northern 10 tribes?
Jeroboam.
What did he do?
Sets
up altars. Where?
Not in Jerusalem.
Bethel and Dan. Who are the priests that serve at those?
We're not Levites.
However, you look like you do be a good priest. Okay. We have these places, these false places of worship established, and these create problems there on out. What are the capitals? Capital of Northern Ten.
The what?
What's the capital of the Northern Ten tribes? Samaria. What's the capital of the Southern tribes?
Jerusalem.
And that's where the temple is, and that's where, of course, you're supposed to be worshiping. Now, you've got this down. A lot of people think, though, that when you look at the physical Israel, that that's God's people. Was that true and is it true? It was true, and DNA just does not matter. Okay, now we'll go through these divided kingdoms. Okay, how great do these people do being divided in their service to God? They fall apart. So, that leads to what?
Captivity.
So, Adam, Noah, Abraham, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, Judges, Joshua, Judges, Kings, divided kingdom, then captivity. Who do they go to captivity to? Assyria and Babylon. When did the Assyrian captivity take place?
A long time ago.
721. Okay. Then we have the Babylonian captivity. Assyrian goes to who? 10 northern tribes. The other captivity, Babylon, goes to the southern tribes. And that goes for how long?
70
years. And it happens when? 587 BC. Very good. Okay. Now that takes us through captivity. They're there 70 years. We know this. Who are folks you can talk about in the captivity when we start talking about Daniel? Daniel, absolutely. You can talk about Daniel and what he went through. What did Daniel go through?
Went through Darius, the lion's den.
Went through the lion's den.
But you see the obedience to God through his prayers.
You see obedience to God and through his prayers. Not bowing down to a giant golden statue.
Meshach, and
I get my story. Yes, thank you. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. What did they escape?
They escaped
the fiery furnace down below, right? Yeah. And they come out and they just smell horribly like smoke, right?
Nope.
They don't smell like anything. You can barbecue and you smell like smoke. These guys were in something that killed folks when they approached it. And yet they come out fine. So we can tell these stories, okay? We can go through the captivity. Now, after all this, when you go through the Old Testament, what's the last thing that's discussed?
Becoming a savior.
What happens to them after they're in captivity?
They return to Jerusalem. Some of them do.
Some of them return.
Not
That's 12 words. Now, in the return, we can talk about people like Ezra who read the law. We can talk about Nehemiah who led people back to build the wall. We can talk about Haggai who was there and saw the rebuilding of the temple and looking at those folks of Judah and saying, do you remember when this was in its former glory? And, of course, then comes along the prophecy of Christ, so forth. That takes you through the Old Testament. You all know that. You know bits and pieces. We know a lot more than we think. We won't go through it all. But tell me, what in the New Testament? Give me some highlights of the New Testament. If you had to kind of do what we just did here and running down these points, what would you mention? John the Baptist comes first. Christ. Herod trying to kill him. Disciples, and specifically in the disciples, what kind of very special disciples that we see? Do we see?
Apostles.
Apostles. How many apostles?
12.
Okay, we could talk about that. What's the difference between apostles and us?
Apostles can do miracles.
They were eyewitnesses.
They could do miracles. They were eyewitnesses. They had to be eyewitnesses.
They're given the Holy Spirit.
They're given the Holy Spirit, which, of course, the responsibility for that was what?
To teach.
Confirmation of the Word. Building up of the saints. What else? Glorification to God. They have all those things. We can talk about the apostles. We can talk about the different stories and things going on. Certainly we can talk about Paul. We can talk about Judas. We have the Gospels. In all of these, we can talk about the crucifixion within the Gospels. What happens after the Gospels? Well, we've got all the letters to the churches. Why? To give us guidelines, to give us ideas how we have to live, to know how our worship goes. All of this stuff, guys. And it's all there within the New Testament and the Old Testament. Somebody says, I don't know enough. We really know a lot more than we think. But the fact is this. We don't have to know as much as a lot of us would think we have to know. It's kind of like the person who says, I can't be baptized yet because I don't know everything about the Bible. When are they going to get baptized, Bobby? It just ain't going to happen. You can't know it all. That's why we're continuing growing. We're following the steps of what Peter says. They're growing the grace and knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. That's what our focus is. It's a constant change, as we've talked about. We're going to have influence. People are going to interpret what we do. Yes, it's important to know these things because we can't sell Christ, and that's really what our life is. We're constant. It's a constant sell in truth about who Christ was. We can't do that unless we know Him. So we're constantly working on that aspect of it. But that brings us really to what we want to tackle today. And that is, okay, if we don't have to have all this information, if we're going to treat all our visits like a success, and there's all these different kind of folks that we can visit, it can be really overwhelming. Because you say, who do we go to first? How do we go about doing it? So we need an efficient and a systematic plan for approaching different folks. Now, there's a manual that I have, and I want to wait just a couple of minutes, but then we'll pull those out and hand those out. This way, and there are lots of different ways to approach folks for visitation. There are congregations that have had very, very successful plans. I think that in having a plan, we all need accountability. We need a structure. My father was a computer programmer for a number of years, and he flowcharted everything. You knew what he was going to do because he flowcharted everything. I find it easier for myself when I'm going to do a sermon or something. I make an outline. So I can say, okay, here's the direction I want to go. This is what I want to accomplish, so forth. Really, we need to do that when we start thinking about how we want to go out and visit. My friend Jack McNeil, and I don't know how many of y'all have met Jack McNeil. No, David had. Okay. We know Jack, of course, through Preacher's Files, but then Jack just also moved up here to Oak Grove in Kansas City, and is there a new preacher there as of about September, October in there. In fact, I was going to bring him down here and talk today. We just didn't get the time to get together. And you know how we talk about the, I don't have enough time. There you go. They've started a visitation program up there. One of the things, the first things they did is they took a map of their area. And they said, this is how we're going to attack this block, this block, this block, this block. And I say attack because we're soldiers of Christ. We really do have a mission, and that's to combat the world, and not in a physical sense, not as the radical Islamists would have it do. I don't want anybody to go and blow themselves up in the name of Christ. That's not our Lord and Savior. He, of course, did things in love and peace. But they took up there in Oak Grove, and they have gone block by block by block. And actually, the program they're using is very similar to what I'm going to describe today. Now, again, there is no set formula, say this is the exact program you approach folks with. The program that I like, and specifically talking right now in the manner of cold calling, is called drive-by evangelism. Now you hear that and you think, oh wow, what is drive-by evangelism? We're going to get into specifically how you approach that. But you have to take even a step further back before that, and you have to plan all things out. Luke chapter 14, 28 through 31 says, "For which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he has sufficient to finish it? Lest haply, after he hath laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king, going to make war against another king, sitteth not down first and consulteth whether he be able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000. We have to sit and we have to say, what program are we going to do? What are we going to need to be involved? What time we can spend with it? So somebody doesn't go, yeah, those Church of Christers, they tried this. Or even within the church, yeah, you guys tried this, you've tried other things, and it faltered on you. Granby's a small place. How many of y'all live right in Granby? Most of y'all live out. Okay. Certainly when we get involved in the surrounding areas, with some of the surrounding towns, and honestly, you know, we're even within 30 minutes of Joplin, which then we really boost the number of folks, okay? One thing we have to get over is when we visit and when we teach the word, it's not a turf war. We don't say, yeah, you know, the Joplin Church of Christ, they're up at this point, but we're going to pass the numbers. We're like, amen, you know, assuming they're solid, which I don't know. I don't know about the congregation there, but we're thrilled when anybody comes in touch with the gospel, okay? But we do have to start somewhere. So often we start basic and local. We say, here's where we're going to go. Well, you want to break a map? Fine, whatever you do. But what do you do as far as reporting back? What you need is you need a system that says, if we go out and visit, say if Wilma goes out and visits somebody this week, who did she visit? What was the kind of reception that she received? Did she get a door slammed in her face? Was it very good, solid visit? And somebody that wants to know more, but Wilma's saying, you know what, it's a person that I feel it would be better if a man came and helped and taught, or somebody more knowledgeable, or, you know, if it's, for instance, a single mom, or maybe it's a single mom with, you know, of course, she would have to be a single mom if she has children, wouldn't she? Okay. Same with children. You would say something like, you know, it would be nice to go, but next time I think I'll bring a second person with me who can kind of help as we talk so the kids aren't bumping and that kind of thing. You'd want to report back some information. Why? Because if there are other people that need to follow up and kind of help out, then they'll have the information there. Now, the problem is this. We talked about all the people that we go through and that we can visit. Sometimes those issues are going to be sensitive. You're not going to want a file back here. And even with the congregation, somebody came and visited you for something, maybe you were struggling with some really heavy things in your family, you don't want everybody in a congregation to know that. Okay, that's one of the blessings of having elders. Of course, you all are working towards that, as a lot of congregations are working toward that. When you have an eldership situation, you can bring them that sensitive type of stuff, and someone can say, hey, Is there anything I can do to say, yeah, these folks need to be visited and it can be filled in on as a need-to-know type basis? When you've got a situation such as this, you may not leave some of the particulars of a situation as in-depth on, say, for perhaps a card for records here. But what you can say is, see this person for more information or something like that if planning to go visit. This was the last visit that I made. This is how many times that I visit. This is special needs they have. You know, Mrs. Joe needs somebody to help her go out and grocery shop each week. We have a friend of ours, Lucille, who's 92. She broke her hip this last year, so she couldn't drive. So we were driving her to services, and it was getting to the point where she was eventually going to be walking around and so forth. And she says, and I was talking to her about her sight, she can't see. I mean, she seriously cannot hardly see anything. But she was driving before she broke her hip, and guess what? And I told folks, we're going to need to get somebody. And actually, this is a sort of congregation I was at before. Now we're at a different one. But I said, this person's going to need somebody to drive her. Nobody's driving her. Here's a 92, 94 person who can't see, who's now continuing because she remembers where the streets are. She's one of those people you drive by on the road and you're going, why are they going so slow? Because she's just creeping down the road driving because she's remembering where everything is, but she can't see it. That's a person that needs help. So you write a card. This person needs help. This person needs somebody to visit them. So we get this program. You find a way to record visits that are going on. You break yourselves into zones if you have enough people. Right now, wow, you've got a lot of people here that could be doing this. You say, okay, here's a section of Granby, here's a section of Granby, here's a section of Granby. We're going to systematically go to this house, this house, this house, this house, if we're talking about different cold call type visits. Again, if we're not talking about cold call visits, we're talking to other ones within the church. Again, you've got your zones and you've got your areas. Certain people that can visit and help out in that area. Now, does that mean, oh, you know, Denise and Bob, you're in this area, so we can't go over there, even though we know these people? No. You do your normal visiting throughout that you always do. But when you start breaking it down in areas, you also know that there are certain people that are going systematically through that, and you would have your own area broken down. If you break it down into areas like that, it's just like anything. You break down into parts. Sometimes you get projects, and you think this project is overwhelming, so you say, we'll focus on this part. And we'll focus on this part. And we'll focus on this part. That's how your visitation can become systematic and you can walk through it. When do you go visit? There are a lot of different folks that are going to have, you know, spur-of-the-moment type visits. David goes to the hospital, you know. I'm sure people are visiting him. I know, you know, a lot of people are visiting. Nobody may go visit David. I don't know how many people visited David. You know, y'all know if you visited David. But David's in the hospital for a little bit. And we maybe all think, well, visit him. But nobody knows. That's why it's important to have people in specific zones and specific areas that know we need to go visit. Things like having and of course, most of us in our bulletins or announcements, we announce such and such, so-and-so sick. But we want to make sure those things are done. We want to make certain that we have people who can send out cards and that kind of thing. That leads me to this next topic. And I'm going to need somebody to write on the board. You're volunteering? All right. Okay. Beatty, I need you to write on the board. Can you reach the top of the board? All right. Let me move these. What we want to look at and the things that we want to write on the board right now in preparation. And again, a lot of these things are going to be more detailed in this material that we're going to hand out. What kind of, here you go, Beatty. Oops. You got one? Okay, very good. What kind of materials, if we're going to talk about visitation as a whole, to all the groups that we mentioned earlier, what kind of materials do we need?
Working knowledge of the Bible.
Working knowledge of the Bible is sometimes helpful. Well, it's always helpful. But not necessarily. We're talking about physical type materials.
Stuff we can hand out,
such as what?
Bulletin.
Bulletin. I heard a tract. Oh, you've got to work on your spelling too. Tract.
House to house, heart to heart.
House to House, Heart to Heart?
CDs
and DVDs?
How do I write that?
That's good. House to House? CD underneath it? DVDs? What else do we need? Or would it be helpful to have?
Business cards.
You can make those out.
I mean, that they don't, that way they have a number of someone that they saw face to face.
I have seen some. They are, and they're not highly expensive, and you can get like, I mean, for $20 you can get like 500 cards. And we've had programs where we've handed out cards. Sterling, focus. When we hand out cards, how did we hand out cards, business cards? Big voice? How many cards did you get each week?
Well, in our old church, we got 5, but I usually got more than that.
Sterling got 5, sometimes you get more. What did you do? Where did you hand them out?
Everywhere.
And tell me some of the places you handed them out.
The mall, the Walmart, Wendy's, McDonald's.
And Sterling, if you got them on Wednesday night, how long was it till you usually got rid of your 5 cards? How long did it take you to give them out?
5 minutes.
About day or less.
Day or less. 5 cards, 5 contacts from a little boy. Now, there were some things that I had to say, son, when somebody's in there standing at a urinal, you usually don't want to hand them we had that. He had a captive audience. Yes, he did. But we say, you know, there are some points where you want to use a little discretion and wait. He handed out quite a few in the bathroom before I realized that he was handing out these cards. But they give contacts. And what kind of things can you put on a business card?
Address of the church.
Address of the church?
Scriptures.
Contact number?
Website.
Time of salvation. Steps of salvation. Pardon?
Name of the church? We got the bookmarkers that have the time of salvation.
Bookmarks.
Those are good, and you have the church address and phone number.
Bookmarks are an excellent idea.
The nice thing about technology, you can make almost all of this stuff yourself.
Oh, yeah. Yes, you can.
So it makes it inexpensive.
And well, and see, that's
we have David.
That's right, and that's it's inexpensive, and typically have a number of folks who can do a lot of these things. Now, what else do we need?
A notebook.
Why?
To take down information.
Take down information when? A cold call. So the idea of a cold call, taking a notebook. So a notebook on there. You know, we're talking, yeah, simple, real simple supplies, because you have to think real simple here if you're going to do it. What else are you going to need if you're... Let's focus on a cold call for a second. If you got a notebook, what are you going to need?
Pencil.
A pen or a pencil. So put a pen. Okay? What else? Put stopwatch down there, Bailey, because I'm going to talk about that. We're going to need a stopwatch. Bulletin, bulletin. That's a bulletin. You want 10 bulls. Okay. You're going to have to also, you're going to have sheets, typically, for yourselves to know who's willing to go attend a visit. Meaning, if you want to go visit, it's really helpful that you can go to the church building and say, here are a number of people who said, if you have somebody you want to visit and you don't want to go alone, here are some folks that I can call right now and are willing to go with me. So write tandem visit sheet, okay? Tandem visit sheet. Tandem. T-A-N-D-E-M. I could have spelled things for you. That would have been helpful, huh? Tandem visit sheet. what other ways that we can prepare for visitation?
That's what we're doing right now.
Studies. Study, or classes on visiting. There are so many different things that we can do. And a lot of this is just sitting down. We need to pick up sympathy cards. Sympathy cards. Congratulatory cards. Have you ever thought about, in the newspaper you see, you know, Dave, what grade are you in? You're a sophomore, so you're going to graduate in 2 years, 3 years.
Hopefully.
4 or 5, top 7, right?
Yeah.
So David graduates. What do you want to do? You send him a card. Now, what if a stranger in town graduates? What would be the point of sending them a... Because typically the paper's going to say these people graduated. What's the point of sending them a card? You recognize it. And you don't have to say, and here are the plan of salvation. You know, you could just say, you know what, congratulations from the Church of Christ, and best of luck in your future. Yes, ma'am?
My husband died, and I received a sympathy card from a Baptist church in Joplin.
Mm-hmm.
Never heard of it before. But, you know, that's a good outreach, just sending cards like you're saying to people.
Again, this goes back to you may have been in the community for 30 years. When you go and knock on someone's door or something, and they said, I've never heard of you.
We need the daily paper delivered.
Oh, say that again.
Daily paper.
Explain this.
We should get it to, so we have these lists of people
daily paper.
The New Counting and Inquisitive is brand new publication. Every week they come out with it.
Obituaries are important. Things such as, you know, you read simple thing like somebody's house burnt down. Oh, that's tragic. Boy, I hope their family, you know, had some. You know, it's good. You don't have to say. And I want to be clear. I'm not advocating one of the a program where you hand out everything, but I am advocating a situation where if you can help somebody, you want to acknowledge your problem and let them know you're there. And if they need help, at least you've said, hey, if we can help, let us know, and you can leave them a contact number or whatever. Those things are important. And that's not... It's just a wise approach to those things. So cards, we want to do that. Sympathy cards, congratulatory cards, thinking of you cards. You know, you talk to people at church, you hear about situations, they may talk about problems they're having, say, you know what, I was thinking about that, or you know, just a card, just a bright word. I remember the very first time somebody told Bailey, bless you, and she just beamed for days because no one had ever told her bless you before. Isn't that silly? She just thought that was a cool thing, and it is. Because someone was thinking of her, and in that manner, you can have a sea squirt.
You just got fired, too.
Yeah, you're fired.
You did a fine job.
Yeah, did a fine job. There are many ways that we can reach out, and we have to plan ahead for these type of things. Yes, classes and visitations and sitting down and going through items, like how we approach door knocking, these are important. But a lot of things start back with the basics. Other things that you'll need, and some things that I've used in the past, Jewel Miller books, correspondence courses. There are a number of different correspondence. You can develop your own. You know, we talk about DVDs, CDs. The way I approach things when I give out CDs and DVDs is I start them out on a pattern. I may start them out with a brief thing on Bible history, or a brief thing on just on Christ, just his lifetime, because it's pretty benign talking about Christ's life, okay? You're not saying, you don't give them their very first CD is the instrumentalism will send you to hell. That in general will kill a lot of your visits if you're talking about that kind of thing. Books, one of the ones are books on bereavement. You know, we all encounter death at some point, but sometimes it's nice to say, you know, here's, and there are a lot of good publications that I found that recently that, and Tom Holland has written a couple, Kyle Butt has written a couple, Apologetics Press has some on it. It's nice if you can have a small book, and a lot of, especially within the Brotherhood, only cost a couple of dollars, a few dollars a piece. And it's important. Yes?
And I noticed out front they have a couple of Alan Webster's tracts, and he's prodigious. I mean, he puts out...
Alan puts out a lot of material.
It would be nice to have a variety of tracts in the car. If you come up to someone and it comes out that they've just lost a loved one, you have a tract on something like that to give them, so you've got a variety.
Boxes full of Alan Webster.
Yes. And see, the thing is, a lot of us, we have the material around us, but we're not using it. It sits in it, and it gathers dust because we expect people to come into our building and grab them, when a lot of time we have to go out and hand them out. And certainly you're going to hand out informational ones about what is the Church of Christ and contact information a lot more than you're going to hand out the dangers of instrumentalism. But if somebody asks on that, you can say, you know what, I've got some for that, and I'll come back this week and deliver it, so forth. All right. Man, can you hand out some of the ones we have? This is a visitation manual that we have. Now this was originally created by a gentleman by the name of Bob D. Smith.
David, what do you got here?
Oops.
Well, no, we didn't. They fell. And then I don't know. What is this, a back page? What is it?
That would be the back page.
There were two. It was a cover, and then page 11 and page 20.
How many?
This is a 22, page 26.
We're going to go all the way through page 38.
And then this one just says evangelism guide, but there's not. It's not exactly.
They're not all done.
I didn't pay David enough.
That's right.
Just kidding you, David. Hey, let me see.
Exactly.
Let me see, and I'll see if I can run through them.
There's three.
Okay, so you'll.
Got run over by a baby.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Let me get it through there.
The last page count in course. The very last page you count in course, and they are basically in three sections.
Yeah.
You
start with the cover page.
Yeah.
Okay. And then
the second section is not necessarily the exact same. Okay. As anybody else.
Oh, it's not?
We're going to figure that
somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
But the very last page will be.
What's the last
counting the course?
The next
page
will be how to assemble a
pen.
That's an important one. That's okay. All right. All of the page numbers are numbered. You'll want to go through 38 on the page numbers.
Okay, this is a 26. Maybe this is a 27.
And I do have them all numbered all the way through, so there are a couple of blank ones. That's all right.
Okay, counting the cost and the page number.
We'll look through that one, Mama. Make sure that one's all done through.
Office Max or Office Depot, or Staples, they all have one in the back.
You wait. You only use one. The first one was dirty.
Okay. Is that one full? Okay. And I'll give. Now, did y'all at least get them in couples? Misty, did you get one? There you go. I'll give you that one there, sir.
That was the whole one, the one that David just took.
You made,
she said that.
We checked.
And somebody listen to count on the back side.
The very, very, very last page on somebody should be Melvin Sapp counting the cost.
Yep.
The very back page is the very last one. Yours?
It may be an extra one. If so, that's all right.
Page 25.
It doesn't have a page number on it.
No, it don't have a page number.
Just says counting the cost at the top.
That's the very last page.
Counting the cost. That says cold calling door to door.
That ain't the same thing.
What's the very last page? Last page.
Very last page.
Well, what we'll do is this. Because this is okay.
It was a low overhead operation.
You should have.
Yes, that's all right, brother.
David, paperclip.
That's what we're going to do. What we're going to do is I'm going to leave you a full copy. And, hey, David, you still have the original, right?
$100 worth of cartridge.
David?
Yeah.
You still have the original, right?
Yeah.
Okay, it's got the original. You'll be able to take it down. Because we're going to want to print out some more anyway. I've got mine bound, and it's important. Or you, like you say, we kind of get we get pages going goofy spots.
It should be his. He's already got four.
Aha! Well, your brothers and sisters tried to help you out. Brothers and sisters tried to help you.
So you'll be out a fourth or a fifth. 20%.
Okay, I got it now. Counting the cost.
Very good.
I knew it all the time.
You had it, you just didn't know you had it.
The David has the original here, and you'll be able to print them out, and you can buy them however. Also on the website, yes, and you can download them. As mentioned in there, we can download them, others from there. When we look at this, we have to tackle this third excuse for fighting change. Now, the first one was, I don't have enough time. And the second one was, pardon? I don't know enough. And so this third one is going to be, I don't know what to do or say. And that's pretty common. And so what we've got in this visitation manual is I've got broken down the 12 people that we want to visit, or 12 folks that we can visit in this manual. And for each one of them, I've broken up 12 specific items that tell you how you can approach those individuals. If you look at, it is going to be numbered page 1. Numbered page 1. It's about 4 pages back there. I'm going to put this back in my book while we're finding page 1. Has everybody got a page 1? Or anybody who's not have a page 1, I should ask? Okay, very good. On this person that we're going to visit, this person that we're going to visit on this one is someone who's visited our services. Okay, somebody who's just come by. Now, what is the very first thing you can do when they're at the building? The very first way you can approach somebody who's visiting your services? Shake their hands. Welcome. That is so hugely important. There's so many people that said, I went in, I sat down, nobody said hi to me, I left, nobody said hi to me, and that was that. Greeting is the very first important thing. What other thing is important to get before they leave the building?
Their address.
Their address. So a lot of churches, I don't look if y'all do or not, but a lot of churches don't have cards. You guys have a signature book, is that correct? We have both. They're very important. Now, can you, that's the key there, can you trust a visitor if you leave it in the pew to fill it out? Sir?
Something we used to do here, we'd have an individual that had the cards, and when they saw visitors, they would physically go hand them the
yes.
card. And they could either put it back to the, if it's before communion, they could put it to, or they would just stand there and wait for them to fill it out so they could have, so at least you knew you had it.
Which is an important aspect of the card in a pew, and that is what needs to go along with that card? A pen. Misty?
Growing up in a denominational church, we had to fill out a card every time we took communion.
Yeah, in many places they do. Why is that?
That's so they can keep track of who is there,
mm-hmm.
who is taking it,
mm-hmm.
how much they're going to need,
mm-hmm.
Right. Regularly.
There are benefits to doing that. There are benefits also because, and we did this where we were at in Kibbe Street in Lima, Ohio. One of the reasons is sometimes you would like prayers of the congregation, that kind of thing. So after they were collected, and they often picked up with communion, they would be given to one of the elders. And therefore, when, of course, they give the announcements or whatever, they may say such and such wants prayers, or this is an item we need to be aware of, so forth.
Well, that's it. There's a congregation I worship with out in Washington that has the card in the pews in case you had somebody who wanted to, you know, have prayers for and stuff. And, down in Florida, they had the cards in the pews for visitors.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why they do.
Yes.
And these were, you know, church cards.
Yeah. And a card can do so much because you get, you know, the first impression is a very lasting impression. And it's very important. Another thing to do, since we're talking about that first impression, what's another important thing to do, even if you have to assign somebody to do it each week? If a visitor comes to your services, what's another thing that you can do to make
them
invite them to lunch? Invite them to lunch. Even if you have somebody that they're assigned each week, or and it doesn't, you don't have to be taking them somewhere. You can say, would you like to come to our home and have lunch? Or, but have somebody to at least give them an invitation, because it gives you, one, if they accept, it gives you a lot more time to get to know them and them you, and see that you're friendly. And two, it does. It establishes, helps to start establishing a relationship. Because do most people initially come to church because they're looking for God? Why do they come to church initially, often? They're looking for friends. They're looking for a social group. They're looking for... We know that while we do have a close-knit family, or should have a close-knit family in the church, that there's something more. We're coming together to worship God. But it's still, you know, there are atheists that go to church. They go to church because of the social aspect of it, because they like the people. So we talk about those who have visited our services. We've decided that we're going to go visit them because we got a card and it said this is where they're at. Okay. The first question that we tackle is, what do I hope to achieve by this visit? And I'm just going to read through this manual on the first page. This is a case where a person or persons have attended our service, probably the previous Sunday. Why would it be important to do the previous Sunday versus 2 months from now?
Recency,
familiarity, the fact that it looks actually like more like you cared instead of going 2 months down the road. Visitor card typically tells, main concern is to get acquainted with the person. Okay, hopefully they're going to still recognize you. They're going to still have this facial thing going on, especially if you introduced yourself. You can ask them, tell them we sure enjoyed having you at the services. In this community, you probably know a lot of folks. And this, as with a lot of the types of visitors that we talk about, some congregations are going to have more of one kind than another. The one where somebody comes in because they're new to the community, you're probably not going to have as many new to the communities here as, you know, some folks in, say, St. Louis, where, you know, even though the economy is not fantastic, they do have a lot of people moving in for jobs, that kind of thing. Should you telephone somebody like that before you visit? Well, honestly, you're just going by for a moment. You're just going by for a second. You can, but a lot of time you may not get a phone number anyway out of the information that you've been given. But this kind of walks you through. Can you do it? You know, in that first thing where you're just dropping by for a second, it may not be a big deal. If you decide, though, instead of visiting, to make a phone call and let them know they appreciate that, that's just as well, too. Again, this is going to... Yes, ma'am.
Well, I was just going to say, some churches actually, the ladies will get together and bake or something, and so they'll take over a small loaf of bread or some kind of preserve, just drop it off, say hello, thank you, we're glad you were there, are there any questions, you know, that type of thing. So they'll do enough for a month, and they have it ready to keep their visitors.
And again, that's not out of church funds, that's just individuals getting together and saying, you know what, this would be a good neighborly thing to do. And when you do those neighborly things, you know what? If you know their address and so forth, they don't even have to be home. But what you've done is continue to establish contact by leaving something there, giving them a reminder about you, showing that you cared their services. And you can say, you know what? I didn't come by to visit very long. Of course, well, this covers this. Let's go further than this. When should you go? Certainly, you want to be going around within the week. The longer you wait, it may be more difficult. The thing is, if you go visit them that week, you can encourage them to the next service. How long do you stay? Now, that's, of course, this is on the next page. See, I jump ahead of myself here. How long do you think you should stay for a first visit?
It depends on whether they invite you in or not.
Yeah, yeah.
If they don't, then chances are they're busy and you just let them know you came by.
Typically, unless this is somebody you've invited before, but if this is just their first time, you just don't even really want to go in unless they're just like, oh, come in. And, you know, in our house, you kind of get some of that. But, you know, some people, they're just like, oh, okay, thank you. That's very nice of you. And you go on. Should you go alone? Give me reasons why or why not a person should go alone.
Yeah. If it happens to be a woman, I think that a man shouldn't go alone.
It's very important.
A man and his wife should go.
Mm-hmm. If you know it's a single guy that you're going to visit, who should go?
A guy
should be wise to send a guy. Can he take a woman along with him?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to get to know families. This is where, again, when you go and visit younger folks break ice. They really do, and it makes it more comfortable. Now, in some certain, you bring a baby, babies are wonderful, but sometimes they're not. This is another on that first video. Here's my screaming baby. Can we come visit you? And that kind of thing. Certainly, that's discretion on all these things. What should you do when you get there? Well, this is the very first visit of somebody who just came by and visited. What do you think? It's real brief. I came by to drop you by perhaps a CD or this or that or a bread or just tell you we really appreciated seeing you. Are you having to break out your 12-point Old Testament outline and all your New Testament? No. You don't have to have all that information there. What do you talk about? You may have found out when they were at the services that they have kids in the same class. You may have a lot of different things. The baking.
That's what I was thinking. Just what they did a while ago, that right there might be plenty.
That's exactly right. And who initiated the first contact?
They did.
Well, no, when they came to your services. Because this person we're talking about here is somebody who's visiting. They initiated, which means they have interest, or they were really lost. in which case, it's a gift from God. That's an open door. There are a lot of things that you can talk about. Again, you may not be invited in. And even if you are, you should not stay long. Because you can overwhelm somebody right off. And there's a point where you can even we could have had you two keep going. We would have been pushy, 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 pushy. And eventually your response would have been, are you following me? Or you just get off my doorstep. Those things had to be balanced. And so when we go to visits, we have to think about the person we're approaching, so forth. So from this first bit here, what do I hope to achieve for visiting? Should I telephone before I go? When should I go? Should I go alone? What should I do when I get there? What should I talk about? The next thing is, should I leave any written material? What would you leave on an initial visit?
A bulletin.
You could very well leave a bulletin. Because that's another one of those good items to send with them when they come to the services. But you could send something like that. What else? Who is the Church of Christ? You could absolutely do something in that line. How long you stay, we approach that. What arrangements should you make before leaving? That's important.
That's why you need to be sure that they have something, whether it was from church before or then, that says a time, again, phone number.
As subtly as possible, on that visit, you want to try to get them to make a commitment to coming back. Do you know how long it takes? And of course, some things are different than others, but before you form a habit doing something, it's right around that number. It's just a number of times. Okay. That's a lot of Sundays, but in general, they look at if you do something about a month, you're good. If you can get somebody coming the fifth and sixth time, you've got a good chance in keeping them, especially if you're interactive with them and making sure they're there. Now, this next question is, what should I report? Well, you go back. In this case, your report is written on the back of your contact notice. You're going to have a sheet that says, I contacted them. This is what I did. This is what I said. You're going to write down when you visit them. Indicate what time of... what the attitude was, the number of folks they had in their family. These are important aspects that you want to record. What's the report used for? What's the information you record? Well, it's used so other folks in the congregation know that if they're going to go out and visit, what's been said, what's been done. If on that first week after they're done, they get 33 loaves of bread, overkill. You know, we've overkilled them, but we want to know about these things. Are you through with them at that point? There's follow-up. And there's always follow-up. There's a lot that you can do. What happens when you don't follow up with something? You lose it. It goes away. Now, this is just one of the number of folks we can do, but it tackles, in each of those folks, it tackles the kind of questions that a lot of people have a fear about and on exactly knowing what to do. I want to write down a couple of things here, and I want some feedback. CL, right? Can I get you to write some things on the board for me?
Do what?
Write some things on the board for me?
Oh, yeah. You trying to embarrass
me? I am. I know it. Okay. What we're going to tackle here is I want folks to tell us when the Jehovah's Witnesses or the Mormons or the Catholics or denomination or your in-laws come and, or anybody come and visit you, what are things that you do not like about being visited?
People who can't take no.
Folks who can't take no. Just put can't take no. Okay.
Time
they come.
Time.
It's a bad time. Well, and this is important. You can put right on your initial contact card, what's a good time to visit? Some may fill it out, some may not. But at least if you've got it filled out, you got a good idea. So you've got the bad time, supper time, not a good time. Of course, if they work,
if
you know.
If they're a good cook, it might be good.
Yeah, hey. What else do you not like about being visited?
Everything.
Everything. Well, what part of everything?
Animals.
Your own?
Yes.
They go nuts.
I don't want anybody scaring my animals.
Yes.
Or being scared by my animals.
Okay. Very good. And that can happen. You don't know how many people you go to the door and I see a big dog at the door. I don't, you know, I just kind of stand back because I don't know what's going on. I'm sure at some point I was afraid dogs would come right through the window at me. That's something you're going to bump into. What else? Upsets your animals. You put that upsets animals.
I don't like it. His name is Dean.
Pardon?
If his name is Dean and he's sitting here next
to Bobby?
When they try and deceive you. I mean, they may try and pretend to be this when in reality it's that.
Okay, deception.
Yeah. That's probably my worst.
D-E?
That's the thing I hate the most.
That's close enough. That'll work.
Well, if you'll ask you goofy questions at the beginning and try to get you to interact when you don't want to.
Right. All right.
You know, it's like a little game.
Get
move
right into the conversion thing.
I don't see.
Move into conversion.
Say what?
Move into conversion. Or try to convert. Convert you in the door.
Maybe she was. No, I just don't like it whenever they don't get to the point. I mean, if they're going to try to convert me, that's fine. They can just hand me a tract.
Right.
But I don't like it when they're like real chatty and want to have a little game.
Right.
They're trying to really break it out and just keep on going and won't ever get to the point.
Almost like Amway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If somebody sells Amway here, I know I'm in trouble.
The thing that annoys me about phone, which I don't get any much anymore with my no-call system, but salespeople who will not take N-O for the final answer.
Won't take no. Oh, when we've got that, yeah, can't take no up at the top already. We've got that. That's important.
If you say no, I'm not interested, but I've got an N, blah, blah, blah. You know, I said, I don't believe I'm interested in it, but they go on and on and on, you know.
That's when I go, thank you,
goodbye.
David.
About the calls, I don't like talking to a machine because they list off a whole bunch of stuff. They don't care if the person's just trying to ask a question or not.
Yeah. I can't stand the automated ones.
So Denise's point, I think you were saying they're playing word games with you.
Playing word games. No point, yeah.
The ones who are following a script.
That's even worse.
The ones who have a script.
Hi, my name is Travis. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's too scripted.
Yep.
Automated calling.
That's good. That's excellent. Oh, what's that? You're all set. That's good. That gives us a general idea here. These are things, and we're going to find different things irritate different people. We're going to find items that one thing may irritate you that may not irritate somebody else as much. Although, when they're playing the word games and there's no. We have to learn how to take no. We have to learn to say, okay, have a wonderful day. And I think that is utmost importance in every interaction, even if they slam your door. Don't go, yeah, well, and make some sign and walk off the lawn, because your neighbor, you can guarantee the neighborhood phone chain and all the people peering out the window know you're in the neighborhood and they're watching you. You go away, if you're with a second person, which I always try to go with the second person, you talk and you smile and you go forward. And you don't do anything to provoke that person. That's a bad deal. I'm going to give you an idea of what I do with drive-by evangelism and how that is done. And I'm going to look for my sheet here. I have a sheet in here somewhere that is under cold calling. And this sheet under cold calling I take with me every time I go to do a visit. It is on it's on the last one. It is on the page directly following number 26. It says Evangelism Guide. Now, I'll give you an idea of how I do this. Again, you can tailor this to any way. The reason Melvin calls this drive-by evangelism is because he literally will be driving down the road, see somebody raking leaves in their lawn, pull over, and get out and go over there to them, okay? I like to go directly to the door, but I'll tell you what, and it's really odd, actually the ones that I have seen out working or doing something, I have had even a higher success rate approaching them versus I have folks at the door, which I find really interesting, and I don't know why. But I mentioned in our list when we were listing materials to take and to have and to prepare for visitation, one of the things that I take is a stopwatch. If I tell you I want to take 2 minutes of your time, what does that mean to you? You're going to talk.
Let's sit down. We're going to be here.
You're going to talk for a long time. One of the things that I initially do in my contact when I come to a door and I say, knock, knock, knock. Hi, my name is Travis Main. I'm from the Church of Christ. I would like, and I have my stop right there. I'd like to take 2 minutes and 15 seconds of your time. Click. What does that tell them? I was really serious about what I said about 2 minutes and 15 seconds. You could take 1 minute and 30. You could say whatever you want because you can get this done actually in about 1 minute and 30 seconds. When I tell them that, and I go through, and a lot of what you do, if you notice you visit anybody, you make sales to anybody. In general, Misty, did you say the same things?
Well, to new customers, basically, yes.
You have, and basically your script. The challenge when you have a script is not to sound like you have a script. But the inverse of that is this. If you say, I'm coming to the door, my name is Travis Main, I'd like to ask you 8 different questions, okay? Okay. Typically, I've got all the information that I need in about 4 questions according to the sheet. You don't have to write, I am such and such and this is such and such, okay? 2:15 is arbitrary. Do you attend a church? Yes or no? They already know you're from the Church of Christ, so they know you're going to answer questions like that. So if they're going to answer questions, and I find, honestly, probably about, when I've gone through this, about 90% or more will go this far. They're like, yes, I attended church. Okay, great, yes. Where do you attend church at? I attend such and such Baptist church. Oh, really? Well, how long have you gone there? Well, about, 10, 15 years all my life, just moved to town, so forth. So you can make a note, okay, Baptist church, been there one more month. Are there other churches you've been a member of in the past? Why is that important to ask if they've been a member of another church in the past?
Well, they might have attended the Church of Christ sometime in the past.
Might have attended the Church of Christ in the past.
And you can also see if there's a pattern if they always gone to a Baptist church, or if they've gone to the Baptist here and Pentecostal there and something else somewhere else, so you can tell they're not really affiliated with any particular organization.
What I have found is they will almost invariably, they will want to explain why they switched. They say, I wasn't happy and I've been looking for different churches, and so I thought I'd try this. They will give you that information. The next important part, because now you're down to question five of nine. The fifth question is, or thing you say is, we each week we take and we deliver Bible CDs to the community on or for free on Tuesdays. Would you like us to deliver you a CD? 50% of the people I've done this with have said yes. You are basically, instead of having somebody in the building here that Bobby can talk to, you have now established that Bobby can go into their home, into their comfort level, and speak to them. Because they have, and when they say yes, you say, okay, what we do is we're going to deliver this each Tuesday. If you're not here, where can I put it? On the doorstep, so forth. You say, so each week, you can just start delivering those CDs. Now, what happens if they throw the CD away? They didn't want to tell you no, but they threw the CD away. What happens? What happens when you come by and deliver the CD? And you knock on the door. Hi, just delivering your CD. Here you go. So, thank you. What happened?
You made a contact.
You kept that contact up. And you'll keep that contact up. And you'll keep that contact. Now, I've had one gal. She says, I don't need these. You don't need to leave these CDs anymore. Like, oh, I said, was there a problem with them? Was there something said on there that... No, I just can't. I can't get my CD player to work, and I can't play them. Well, if you'd like, I can come in and see if I can fix it. Would you? Sure, fix it. And she still receives CDs. You have to. You don't just say no. One of the things you do is you take no politely. You don't say, well, no, why not? Or you kept pushing. I'm fine. If somebody didn't want me to deliver them anymore, that's okay, because you want to leave a pleasant impression. But a lot of time it may be that simple. And most of the time I don't have that problem. You've got a gospel meeting coming up. You've been delivering these CDs now every Tuesday like clockwork. You've said, you know what, we want to start them on the life of Jesus. We're going through the life of Jesus. Then we want to do a series on the authority of the Bible. You start them on those CDs. But you got this gospel meeting going up. You put a little flyer inside their CD jacket. When they open it up, there it is right there. A lot of people say, well, they're going to throw them away, this is that. But if you're making contact, you're building a relationship, it's worth the 25 cents that it costs to make that CD to continue to build that relationship. What I've also found with a number of folks, and especially, honestly, some of the more senior folks, I said, and if you need a hand or anything, just give me a call. Because they've got your contact, because that's another thing you can put on your CD jacket. You can put on your CD jacket the name of the sermon, the website, and contact information for more CDs. Y'all have a lot of audio on your website, things that people can constantly be going to. Again, 50% of the people will say, yes, we want the CD. Now, aside from visiting, do y'all have a laundromat here in Granby? Unless somebody tells you no, start taking CD jackets with the word free in there with your sermons, and just put a stack of like three or four down there each week, free. And then have somebody go back on a Wednesday or something and see when they're gone. And go back. I had the gal that works at the laundromat says, man, your CDs go so fast around here. You'll be stunned how people need it. Why do you think they would go at a laundromat? Everybody's there, but who is typically there? Who is typically there at a laundromat? Average people, certainly, but people that, of course, don't have a home. Why don't they have a home?
Well,
often they won't, but they don't have the washer and dryer. And typically, in general, if you've got a home, you're going to have your washer and dryer. Why would they? Typically, they're going to be younger. They're not as established. So you've got folks who are at the critical juncture in their time, in their decision-making process, who are being faced with something that they're willing to listen to. Another aspect of this, if you can hand out Spanish CDs, you would not believe, because you have a lot, again, you have a lot of folks who can't afford the house and so forth with your folks like that. If you've got an access to someone who does sermons in Spanish, those will fly. They will go. I've been at some laundromats where I'll hand out 30, 35 CDs a week. That's a lot of contacts. And especially when you think 52 weeks a year, I don't know what 52 times a 38 or 35, but that's a lot of information. And on every CD, I start with my sermons. Of course, you know, if you're recording ones from the pulpit, you don't say, you know, that Christian website or Granby Church Christ or anything like that. But you can write that on a jacket, and they'll go visit your website, and you don't know where that goes. They may forward it to their friends, and boom, out it goes like that. That is very critical. If you don't get past that anywhere on the sheet, you've come away hugely successful. If you don't get past, where do you attend? You know, let's say, you know, I'm a Baptist. No, I don't want the CDs. And I've attended Baptist church for 50 years. You know, when you go back, or anybody looks back in it, you can say, oh, wow, did you know that this neighborhood is like 70% Baptist? And believe it or not, that kind of stuff is helpful. It's helpful to know who your target audience is. If you ever deliver something, things that may appeal to them, this will pay off. You're gathering information about the people you're trying to bring Christ to. Next question, of course, is interested in a 15-minute Bible study. You will get occasional yeses. Interest in correspondence study. If they say no on the 15, they're going to say no on the correspondence study in general. And they're going to say no the rest of the way. What I typically do is when they start going down the no, I just stop right there. I say, okay, you know, I'll deliver this CD, and of course I'll take down their name, and I'll write the address as I'm going away, because I'm at the address. The address is typically on their mailbox. I don't have to ask them for that. I've got their name when I introduce myself typically, and we can go from there. It's so quick to go knock, knock. Hi, my name is Travis Main. I'm from the Church of Christ. If I could, I'd like to take, you know, 2 minutes and 15 seconds of your time, beep, and ask you 8 questions. Most folks will do that. Now, again, if you have somebody say, no, no, thank you, slam, I don't have that happen very often. When it does, okay. And I always make sure, even if they're sitting there, say, have a wonderful day. Most people will give you the chance to say, have a wonderful day. And you go forward. You don't pester them. You don't send somebody back immediately. But you've made your contact. And you know not to annoy them later if you do visitation attempts later on. This in itself, following kind of pattern, will generate so much activity in success of getting a CD in their hands. Yes, the ideal thing is to get them in the building. But typically, when we go to visitation, the very first thing we want to talk about is the plan of salvation. I think that's important, but let's think about the plan of salvation. What's the first step?
Hearing
the word. Yeah, and believing it. Hearing and believing takes time. It takes time. So I would rather start out, get them a CD in their hands, get them comfortable with me, especially if I'm returning it, build that relationship, and have folks saying, ah, this is a good group of folks. I think I'll go visit them based on what I've heard. You know, this preacher, and it may be preacheritis, but they say, you know, I like hearing this preacher, and they'll want to at least go see, put a face to the preacher, that kind of thing, see the people. This is how you can get in the door versus the knock, 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 and a card. Now, all of those are successful. I found that handing out CDs, using that 25-cent bit of technology, and actually, if you go through and you get CDs on sale, you can get them a lot cheaper. You can get them, you know, at times like 13 cents a CD. That's not a bad investment. Follow up for a couple minutes here and we'll go. What kind of follow-up can you see if you somebody agrees to take CDs? Have your young teens. One of the biggest things is, I don't have anything to do. I've got a great car that I like to zip around in, but I don't have it. In the church, well, you can get them delivering the CDs. What else is important about the CDs? What other work surrounds that?
Somebody has to make them.
Somebody has to make them. And I tell you what.
It's a pretty good job.
Once you get putting these CDs out and around at homes, at laundromats, at hotels, at these places, you're going to find you are making a whole lot of CDs, and it is tough to keep up. So you've got to have people who are willing to get involved in the work of the church and help out in that area. There's labeling the CD jackets. There's, of course, the deliverance. And then you have to go through and you have to do the continual training. How do you treat, you know, how does a young person treat that? What do they do when they go to drop off something? There is work involved with follow-up. Follow-up says what to folks?
You care, you're concerned.
Their care, you're concerned. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, and it goes back to change and time. If you've got somebody, though, that and your young folks or anybody else that says, you know what, yeah, I can go by on Tuesday and take an hour out of my time, and I don't have to preach the gospel, and I don't have to do that. All I have to do is be friendly and drop off a CD. It goes a long way.
It says a lot to people. I mean, they may be moderately interested when you start dropping off the CDs, but if you've been doing it for 3 months, 6 months, and they see you every week, you know, that's... Some people are going to just sit and wait and see how long, and yeah, they'll probably be here 2 weeks, and I'll never see.
That's exactly right. They may think you're going to end it. What are other things, if you've been delivering CDs to someone's house for 2 months, what are some other opportunities that can come up?
Additional discussions.
Additional discussions. Question about the sermon. Later on they may go, you know what, that preacher talked about such and such topic. I'd really like to know more about that. Okay, we do Bible studies at this such and such time. We can do them at your home. We can do them at the church building. We can do it at the public library if you want, where you feel comfortable. All those things play into it. Now, this is just one aspect of evangelism, of visitation, cold call, the latter part of it. Take these visitation manuals, go through them, look at some of these questions, look at some of the ideas. Kind of plan out how you want to do this. And if you all want to, in the future, what we can do is we can come back, we can practice going through some of these things and some of the responses, whether it's going to be a slam door, which doesn't happen very often, an atheist, which happens occasionally, which doesn't mean they're going to be mean. Actually, it's the ones who say, well, I already go to church. But see, that's the thing about the CD. Because the fact is, we're not ecumenical. But most denominations are. They don't care where your CD comes. They're like, oh, one Bible lesson is as good as another. Okay. And that's why they're willing to accept what you have to offer. But we can go through that in the future. And then we can get out and do some of this stuff if you want. I'm willing to come down and take a whole day. And the thing is, the more we get out, if the congregation decides to make the change and go with a consistent effort on these things, you've got Granby, you've got other areas, you've got churches you can visit. You know, we talk about going on mission trips, and we've been talking about this quite a lot lately. We have some friends who are going to Jamaica, or Bonaire, this next week. It's costing like a couple $1,000 per person to fly over there, and they're going to build a house or something. The fact is right now the western United States, northwestern portion, has very few solid churches. They are struggling. You want to go on a mission field? Go there. Guess what? We can all get out there pretty inexpensively and stay in the congregations out there. They'll be willing to help you out. You can go there very inexpensively, and because you've dealt with having to door knock and go through and do that kind of visitation, you can. That's focusing again, though, on cold calling. If in your plan you set out times and a schedule of visiting all those other folks we mentioned, you're going to accomplish a lot, and we're going to find we're extremely busy. Thoughts or anything, or questions or ideas that we may have missed over, something we need to look at?
I'd say we're going to have to develop a pretty good record keeping.
Yeah.
It's very important to have records.
Like you said, it balloons pretty quickly. A couple weeks of asking people if they want CDs, and you've got a pretty good delivery crowd.
So you certainly do.
So you're going to have to know where you've been, and where you're going back to, and where you're not going back to.
And that's why it's so important to go systematically and in areas, because if you just went... it's going to look like a tangled ball of yarn. And if you have people assigned to specific areas, certain tasks.
This is where you're trying to make 400 CDs a week.
Mm-hmm. And which is a blessing. Man, if you're doing that, you're doing something right. You're doing something right because you're getting the message out. And that is what we're supposed to be doing.
What would it be? I just kind of thought about maybe just mapping out in like one area, say take, okay, we're going to take this area, work on it for like the first 2 to 3 months. Mm-hmm. No other area but that area. And then the next 2 or 3 months, work on an area. The next 2 or 3 months, work on it. And so in the 12 months, take 2 months and try to start
that. Way to go.
I don't know if that would be.
Well,
that way then.
Well, if we didn't kind of know who in that area is going to be receptive,
then you would know, okay, this area,
you would have to go back to everybody.
We saturated this area and move on.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about everybody in the congregation getting together and making a list of their friends, people that they think would be receptive, and going that route first.
That's an excellent idea.
Before we ever start the cold calling thing.
That's an excellent idea.
Because we all, everybody in the congregation has people that they know.
The relationships that we have with one another are the strongest situation we have got. And it's those that say, you know what, I like this person, and I wouldn't mind spending more time with them. That's why it's so important to show your love in all things we do. Be a good neighbor. Be a good neighbor. That your influence, your life, has such an impact on others and interpreted in so many ways. They're bound to ask questions. They're bound to ask questions. They're bound to want to know.
We had an elder at a church, and he said if somebody's known you any length of time, for more than a week or something like that, and they don't know you're a Christian, don't tell them.
Yeah.
Because they should know.
They should know.
They should know by the way you behave and the way you talk and things you don't say.
And that is why it's so important when we step back and we look at our time and our lives, how we schedule it, how we schedule it. We're salesmen for Christ, really. And that's putting it kind of bluntly, but we really are. Our life is devoted to Christ. It should be. The determination we all have to make, is it really devoted to Christ? And if there's a lot of room that we can be putting in there, since our purpose is to be here and serve Him through our good works, are we living up to our purpose? Are we fulfilling our abilities? Are we taking care of those talents, or are we burying them? That's what it comes down to in a lot of ways. And you're not alone when you go do this kind of stuff. You always should go with somebody else. Make a list of people who are willing to go with you. If you get those things, it's very encouraging. And the more you get involved in it, it's just like anything. You almost get addicted to it because you're like, wow, we made it a success. Oh, we did this, we did this. And you want to do more and more of it as you get going.
It seems to me that the concentration should be on delinquent members and visitors. Mm-hmm. Because people might say, well, we used to go to Church of Christ. Well, that can hurt you when you go out.
It certainly does.
You need to work on the people who have been through those doors.
I think the first 11 kind of folks that I have listed before the cold calling are truly some of the most important, because they've either expressed interest or they're involved in some way already with the church. But yet our big emphasis is always on the cold calling. But there's so much work that we can be done within. You know, you have somebody in the hospital for a period of time, get somebody out there. if you decide to go through and say, we're going to do a cold calling type thing, I think even months beforehand, in different ways you start getting your name out, whether it's through gospel meeting, whether it's, it always should be through sending cards to people, not cards about here, we've got this meeting coming, but you know, the sympathy cards, the congratulation cards. Maybe you put an advertisement. I don't know even if y'all advertise ever when you assemble or when you get together, putting out some articles on occasion. I don't know if you have it. Certainly radio type programs are helpful. There's a lot of ways you can go, but the more your name is in front of folks, the more they feel like you're a member of the community versus, I didn't even know there was a Church of Christ in Granby.
See that in Little Lincoln County News, a lot of the congregations and people here in town will have, when they have different things, rarely do you think things about our group.
And you know,
a little
silly little thing is, for instance, we just celebrated our 19th anniversary. If somebody says, you know, Church of Prairie Hills, Church of Christ, 19th anniversary to Travis and April, it means something to us. But you know what? The whole community or anybody goes through that bit, just read it and was aware of that name and so forth, and they'll put a lot of that kind of stuff in for free. And they just read your name, and they just saw that you cared, and that makes an impact on people. That says, ah, that's a church that's as caring and is involved. Little things that you don't think about like that.
It would prepare for the cold
call. It's preparation. It's preparation. Is there a 100% answer or anything? No. Is there a ton of different ways you can approach it? Yes. Do you need to do it in the... Absolutely. Do you need to do it in a way you can follow up? Absolutely. And do you always need to do it in a loving way where you don't put people off? Big time, yes. Because one mistake can go for you. Of trouble, even if you have a ton of good things that you do in the meantime. Because people, while they remember the good things, they like to remember the rotten things far more than that. David, do you have another song, sir, or any more comments before we... Yes, ma'am.
What do you say to people when they say, well, we came here for a while, but we just don't get anything out of worship? What do you say to that?
You know, one of the things that when folks approach the gospel and they approach it as a social type situation, the immediate answer for us is, we know it's not about us. It's about serving God. But most things, and the reason folks go to larger churches with more kids and so forth, is it is about them. And I think that really you don't argue with them, but what you do is you give them information. You give them things like CDs. So eventually, wherever they're at, they'll see a difference in doctrine if they're truly seeking. Those who seek will find. But you can't force somebody. You just can't. And I think we hit lots of folks like that. You know, they say, well, I just didn't.
You can sympathize and you can just tell them what your experience has been like.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, and if they haven't been where you're at, say, well, you know, I love it. And here's all the things that we do. You know, this is one of the cool things, even like the youth thing that we went to here in October, was it? It's been a while. They're coming up. It's October. Those things are neat, but we always want to surround, we always want to have gospel things. You know, those are neat to do for our young folks, but it's also neat to say, we're doing these studies, we're getting together these time of the weeks, and these kids are doing this study. We went out and did this with the senior center. Get them involved. We go out every Wednesday and we teach at the senior center. Just having our kids involved in that kind of activity will move them up through it. If you get people excited and build those relationships, I look forward myself to going each week and seeing the certain people that, you know, that I haven't seen, and I, you know, honestly wish you could more. Other thoughts? Okay, Mr. David, where are we singing?
Let's sing Any Word of Jesus.
What number there, sir?
390.
And by the way, I haven't said it, but I appreciate y'all having me down today. This is a topic that, to me, I love to visit. folks at the hospital. I love to visit seniors. I love to visit members who want to talk about the Bible. I love to visit folks that just need a friend. It's exciting. And you build so many things. When April goes and visits that 90-year-old gal, they talk about all sorts of things. They talk about knitting and sewing and all those things. But there's a lot that is shared. And there's a lot that a lot of folks can give to us in our lives that is going to be lasting and have a very solid impact. Again, when I go visit, as April says, it's almost like a selfish thing. I feel like I get so much more out of visiting than other, you know, than the one I'm visiting. And that's, you know, that's kind of how we want to try to approach all these things.